And now,
Capital 263.
So welcome to the Capital 263. Free to say it and free to do it. My name is Robson Isaac Shoes Lambada, and today we are having a discussion that is so interesting whilst we are waiting for the elections that are coming up. And today I've got guests in the house. And the guests that I have, I've got Mr. Richard Runyararo Mahumba, who works with the Leaders for Africa Network, and also Dr. Nkululeko Kusivanda, who is the spokesperson for Nelson Chamisa, who is the presidential candidate for the MDC Alliance. And who is helping me today to moderate this discussion is Simba Moyo. Simbarashe Moyo is the chairperson of the Combined Harare Residents Association. So what we're talking about today, we're talking about the opinion surveys that always come from probably think tanks, and they come from civic society organizations, they come from individuals. But today we'll be looking at two specific surveys, and these two specific surveys actually, they give predictions of who is going to win the elections. So to kickstart this discussion, I'll give Mr. Simbarashe Moyo to give us a background to the surveys before we go to our guests in the house. So, but before go to Mr. Simbarashe Moyo, I would like to greet our guests.
Thanks.
How are you, Mr. Richard?
I'm doing great.
Oh, how are you, Doctor?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
How are you, Mr. Simba?
Thank you. I don't know whether I should call you Comrade Shoes or give us your proper name, by the way.
Yeah, of course. Many people ask my name, but I always tell them, it's that Shoes Lambada. So when you say shoes, just remember heels, pumps, sneakers,
yes.
Sandals, or anything. Free to do it, free to say it. That's what they do at the Capital 263.
Thanks, Comrade Shoes Lambada, and thanks for inviting us to your very beautiful studio. It's the best studio in Zimbabwe, not only in Harare. Just to shoot to the point, we are here to discuss about two recent surveys that were done, one by the Afrobarometer and the other by Matsaga. I want to call it the Matsaga survey because it was done by an individual, if I'm not mistaken. And then the Afrobarometer predicts that Nelson Chamisa is going to get 31% of the votes when we cast our votes on the 30th of July next month. And then Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa is going to get 41%, and then the rest are undecided according to the Afrobarometer. And then in terms of the Matsaga opinion survey, he is predicting that Nelson Chamisa is going to get 24%, and Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa is going to get 70%, while the rest are again undecided. So these are the two opinion surveys that we are going to be discussing about. So we are going to, you know, dissect these surveys, interrogate them. And, you know, because we've got the experts around us, we've got Dr. Nkululeko Kusivanda, the spokesperson of President Nelson Chamisa, and we've got Richard Runyararo Mahumba, who is from the Leaders for Africa Network. So I think we can now kickstart our program. We've got just a few questions that we want to ask our panelists. So I will hand over back to my co-moderator.
So I think the basic question that every person would want to ask is that how reliable are these surveys? And when I'm asking this question, I'm not saying that defend your party or defend the predictions or defend what came out of the surveys, but how predictable are the surveys objectively? Because I know we academics, we know these surveys, how they happen, the qualitative and quantitative research that goes through these researches, and how they process this information to become what it is to the public. But how reliable are they to the general person?
My name is Dr. Spanda. I think that the surveys would be useful in any other country. They are certainly of no value in Zimbabwe, despite the fact that, of course, they predict that if you read them very carefully, they actually predict a victory for President Nelson Chamisa. If you correct them for time and for some nuances that aren't corrected for at the time of the research. But I'll tell you why they are insignificant. It's because you're doing this kind of survey at one point in the year. Even if you had the best methods, the best systems, and you're crunching the best numbers on earth, you're not going to get a view of how people are going to vote on the day 2 months out, before the campaign even begins. You know, that's when these numbers were taken. And also, given that the numbers already show that you have nearly as many people who are as undecided or unwilling to answer the question as there are supporters for these candidates. So, you know, it's nearly an equal split between those who will vote for, who say they would vote for ED Mnangagwa, and those who would vote for President Nelson Chamisa, and those who are not aware of how they're going to vote. So that indication, a 30% non-response or non-knowledge sort of response indicates that the survey isn't at a level where you can trust it. And even if you could trust it, it's taken way before the election. It's not reliable at all. A survey that would be reliable is one that's taken a night before the election.
So, in short, you're saying that these surveys are useful in as far as assisting probably us as residents in getting to know what might, you know, come up after the election. I mean, in terms of getting the results of these elections. So, just moving on with this program, we just want to give your quick take, Mr. Mahomba. You said that they're useful, but they are not very reliable in terms of being clear determinants of what really then comes out when people then cast their votes.
I think a proper survey should be cognizant. We should look at issues of its geographic spread. Not only should we look at its geographic spread, but we should look at the methodologies that were used for conclusions to be reached. But what is very pertinent, it is also for us to interrogate the hand that would have crafted a particular survey to say what are their influences, what are probably their leanings. So for us to really come to a point to say a survey is genuine, we have to assess, was it done countrywide or not? But again, another obvious challenge that comes with surveys is that at some point they do endorse, or maybe should I say legitimize or delegitimize certain political actors. And that on its own quite poses as a challenge. And again, you'd also discover that a survey might be conducted at a point when there is a particular euphoria that is directed towards a particular political actor. And at times, it could also be done at a time when that euphoria towards a particular political actor is declined. So for us to absolutely bank on surveys is quite problematic. But what is advantageous about surveys is that they give us general reflections on power, on the power that certain political parties have consolidated. But obviously, they can be dismissed by particular actors because sometimes their results might not be in the favor of particular interests of those particular actors. So we need to be to factor in all those perspectives as we're making our analysis.
Yeah, but I mean, from what you have said, I think you talked about hands being involved.
Yeah.
So when they were talking about hands, I was talking about influences that are influencing the measurements. Was already when we talk about the Afro Barometer is talking about 31 to 41. So the 31 to 41, if added up, is 72%, and the undecided vote is 28%. And from the Matsaga survey, it's 94% that is accounted for, and the one that is not accounted for is 6%. So what really are you saying about the hands? Are you talking about external factors, as in external countries? Or a civic society, or probably individuals,
or rather, to put it mildly,
yes.
let's address the issue of the variances.
Yes, the variances.
How do you explain this huge gap? How do you explain these variances? Can someone conclude, let's say, after looking at this, to say a survey can be partisan. Can someone do that?
I think it depends with the context. But what is very important is that a survey, a poll survey, is an entity of political science. And political science comes with it, with the element of political analysis. And usually whenever inclines to a particular thought have to be taken, it is unavoidable that there could be particular biases. So certain surveys can propagate a particular line of thought that is falsely in favor of a particular reality, which contradicts the actual reality on the ground. Whereas particular surveys can actually point out to the genuine political context. So it depends with the reliability of a particular survey. Maybe let me just finish.
Okay.
And then historically, when you look at the Afrobarometer, in 2013, it posited projections that were synonymous with the outcomes. So it is within that context that when we look at the questions that it posits and the answers that it puts across, it can be counted as a reliable election survey entity.
Okay, so my point actually was to come to the final conclusion to say that when you look at these surveys, the results that came, how do you see them? Are they reflective of what is going to happen on the election day?
This is why from the outset I said you need to look at the geographic spread. We need to look at the methodology. But one problem with these surveys, which I think my colleague would agree with me, we only find more figures than the explanation to how issues were arrived at. For instance, you find a situation whereby you are told that a certain percentage of people could not provide answers. And you are not told of the circumstances, the immediate circumstances that caused them not to give particular answers. So you need a situation whereby when you say this candidate is going to get 30%, what approaches did you use? What points of analysis did you use? Because it is obvious that if you do a survey in Bulawayo and Harare about the elections, the answer is going to be obvious.
Thank you very much. I think we now need to hear from Dr. Sibanda. I think you have participated in surveys before. In your view, how do you explain these variances? I mean, we are talking about these two opinion surveys that were done, the Afrobarometer one and the Matsaga one. How do you precisely explain this variance that we are talking about?
To start with, these surveys were not carried out at the same time, and there are a lot of movements in terms of people's preferences, and those will explain the variances to a certain extent. But also that I think that I can only vouch for the methodologies used by Afrobarometer. I think that they are certainly vigorous enough to be classed as scientific. So it could be that the other surveys do not pass the muster. But I think that what your listeners would want to hear is if this survey says that the MDC is trailing Mnangagwa Rez of sometime in April. What is it that the President Nelson Chamisa is doing to catch up? And I think that that's the important message that the people of this country are looking for. I think that they are not paying attention to surveys at all, and that these surveys haven't had a huge impact historically in the decisions they make, because they're not the mainstay of African politics. I think that surveys are important in Western politics. As a matter of fact, it seems to me as though political or electoral surveys in Africa and Zimbabwe per se are simply designed to be an academic exercise that has nothing, no more value to anything. And then I'll tell you why. Because if they were being done to find out where the vote is going to lie, then you're going to have to do them on a more regular basis and continue to do them until the elections. And if you only do them once per year, then they're reflective of nothing. Political opinions change in a day's time.
In our previous discussion, one of the panelists mentioned that surveys create, they are meant to set an agenda, so to speak. Whose agenda is that? Do you share that perspective that surveys are meant to set a particular agenda or some kind of agenda?
And before I think Dr. Smanda responds to your question, I think you know Ixon needs to respond to the question that was raised by Richard Runyara concerning about the hands behind the what the surveys. So is there an objectivity in these surveys, or probably is because they want to satisfy the hand that feeds them?
Look, I have no basis upon which to accuse Afrobarometer of being manipulated behind the scenes to carry out its survey. So it will be disingenuous of me to second guess them in this instance. I have no evidence against them, and I do not doubt the rigorous nature of their methodology. I do think that they do not correct for a number of things. For example, the history of violence in this country, they do not seem to take that into account when they are getting people's answers, say, from rural areas and from some urban areas, and think that they need to respond. The surveys need to answer that or protect themselves from becoming spurious on the basis of what you'd call a crazy variable affecting the outcome. But I think that the take home here, and if you're going to be serious, and I don't know why agenda setters like yourselves really waste a lot of time talking about these surveys. This is Africa. Let's not try to be living in a first world country. And of course, if it's only one survey per year, it is as useless as anything else. It is as important as my mere guess where the election is going to go. So we shouldn't be talking about that. I think what we should be talking about is the contradictions that exist between President Nelson Chamisa and ED.
But I think, Dr. Sumanda, as much as you want us to talk about the future, I know that the past is so important and the present is so important. Because if these two surveys are talking that Chamisa is going to lose by 31% and by 24%, you should be concerned. So the moment when we say that...
The surveys are not saying that he is going to lose. They're saying that as of April.
As of April, he get 31%.
He would
get. Then from the Masaka, he's going to get 24%. So therefore, what I'm saying is
Let's not talk about Masaka.
Is that a true reflection is on the ground right now?
No, let's not talk about the second survey. That's a kangaroo survey.
Do you say it's a kangaroo survey?
Because its methodologies aren't rigorous enough. The person who's carried out the survey doesn't have a recognizable profile. And for that reason, they cannot be relied upon at all. The profile of the scientist is very important to the science. Yes, it doesn't have a track record at all. Now, I'm not going to make reference to that. And it will be wrong to interpret any of the surveys as saying that President Nelson Chamisa is going to lose to ED. I mean, look, Zimbabwe is a country of near 90% literacy rate. And people who are educated like that do know what the stark differences are between a vision of a 70-something-year-old man and a 40-year-old upcoming futuristic person. They understand that this country needs to move forward and cannot rely on the history. They know that President Idi has been in the government that has destroyed this country for the last 37 years. They understand more clearly. They read these people. Do not you can play around with any audience. Do not play around with the Zimbabwean audience. These people are sharp. The only reason ZANU-PF has been winning is because they haven't been doing it free and fair. But the Zimbabwean people have the intellect, the brain stamina to make the difference between the stark choices that we have. This is going to be a revolutionary election.
So my colleague here, we are coming to you now because... You talked about the Afrobarometer, which predicted the election results for 2013.
Yeah.
And they are again coming in 2018 now, making some predictions. But we haven't heard the same about Matsaga. Can you shed some more light in terms of probably if you have a track record of these guys? Have they done some surveys before? And what were they like?
I think the doc is bringing a valid point, that aspect of a track record, that aspect of an intellectual reputation, that aspect of a background in positing issues. And But what is problematic with the logic of his submission is that whilst he concurs that the people that provide these estimates or these predictions are supposed to have a background, to then deny the projections of the current survey, whereas in 2013, what happened, what was projected actually was synonymous with the outcomes of the elections, really is something that calls for much food for thought. But again, coming back to correct the aspect on the agenda setting, when I mentioned the aspect of agenda setting, I was defining a situation whereby how the mood is set by these, not necessarily that they drive a particular agenda, because to then say they drive a particular agenda is to insinuate that probably the thought is a hired thought. So I think we need to put in a correction to that effect. But again, there is another important submission that the good colleague makes to assert that Zimbabweans are learned, and because Zimbabweans are learned, they are bound to notice failure. But I think the moment one speaks of failure, we need to question to say, what is your experience of failure? Because for certain sectors of the academia, what has been defined as failure has been defined as success. For instance, the issue of the land reform. For instance, issues of indigenizing the economy. It is something which has a cross-cutting academic approval. So to then say Zimbabweans are learned, and because they are learned, they are prone to be anti-establishment, I think it is a problematic submission. Because this is why even when you come to the academia, you see a situation whereby people that take a pro-establishment stance are said to be less academic. But those that take an anti-establishment stance, they are said to be, no, this one is more academic. So I think we need to stop evaluating academic astuteness on the basis of what we wish or on the basis of our partisan leanings and expectations.
Probably still on him. Yeah. I asked you another question on the Matsaga. Do you have any track record of their, you know, service that they've done before? If you have.
No, I was actually agreeing with the doc that it was the first time that I ever heard of such. But with effect from 2013, and I'm still emphatic on that point, the outcomes manifested as predicted. And probably now that there's been a shift in terms of the time, the predictions of the current report might actually work in a greater favor of probably the leading political party.
Okay, that's fine. I think you wanted to say something, Doc.
Yeah, of course, there's the need to respond to that. I think that my colleague here, once again, takes things on a heap here. You do not find any academic credence in any survey that surveys political opinion that is 7 days old. I mean, 7 days is a long time in politics. They say 24 days these days in the age of the internet is a long time. So there isn't any credence. If any survey that was carried out a month or two before an election were to somehow reflect the outcome of the election, that is what you would call a chance occurrence. It is not really something that you could rely on politically and say that you expect that occurrence to happen again. And besides, Zimbabweans are aware that the 2013 election was not a free and fair election. And for that reason, unless the surveyor was seeking the opinion of those who then went ahead and rigged the election, then certainly it would make it a correct prediction. But let's make it very clear. The reference to the education levels of the Zimbabwean population, And we need to be very clear about that. And the grandeur of their thought is that, look, not to say that Zimbabweans necessarily hate or look down upon establishment academics. It is to say that an educated people does not quickly forget that, as Idi would like us to think, does not quickly forget that ED was in government for 37 years. They were not going to quickly forget that in this country we killed 20,000 people and that ED was the Minister of Security in the President's office and that he was directly responsible for those deaths. They're not going to forget that he called every person who was a ZAPU supporter and Ndebele by tribe a pest that needed to be killed using DDT. They're not going to forget that ED has confessed on video that he was responsible for the fiasco that led to the unity government in 2008, whereupon the election was inconclusive thanks to ED. Zimbabweans are intelligent enough to understand that President Nelson Chamisa provides an alternative to that. That under President Nelson Chamisa, you're not going to have a single election that's going to be disputed because the international norms are going to be put in place. President Chamisa is going to walk in right into State House, and the first thing he's going to do day one is declare.
Before you continue, just let me. I want you to tell me one thing. What has changed between April, when this barometer, the Afro barometer, predicted the 31% against the 41% up to now? What has changed?
Let me tell you what has changed. But before I tell you that, let me say that there needs to be no change in political terms for people to move their opinions. As the environment becomes more politically active, people change their opinions, okay? By April, the political campaigns had not begun. They have begun now. In April, President Nelson Chamisa was still building the infrastructure that he needed to begin campaigns, and that has begun. If President Nelson Chamisa had gone to Chiredzi in April, you would not have seen the crowds, the awesome crowds that we saw last weekend when he went there. I think that when ED looked at those pictures of people in Chiredzi, and it appears as though they are bang in the middle of Harare, a very urbanized city, I think if I were him, I would have started packing. It looks like State House is not going to be his home for a very long time. And we could help him pack. It's not a problem. But I think that we already see the kind of miracle in the countryside, in the cities, that is resonating with the people. We see old people when Chamisa walks by in the rural areas stopping him to say, "We thank you for the courage. We thank you for the things you do and for your plans." We experienced a massive positive response to the announcement of our SMART program, which is part of our campaign promises. And people are responding very well to our land policy, which says that anyone who has a piece of land leased to him by the cruel policies of ZANU-PF that simply make everyone a lodger by giving them land on a lease basis. We're saying to those Zimbabweans, you're now going to have that piece of land and have title deeds, and that for that reason, you can leverage it in order to get capital to farm. ZANU-PF has made
thank
us...
You, thank you,
can
Doug.
I just finish? ZANU-PF has made us destitute because they have given us land that we can't use, that we can only help erode away. They are destroying Mother Earth. You need to give people the implements to carry out agriculture when you give them land so that we can continue to be the breadbasket of Africa and we can continue to feed our families. Now, this is the promise of the future. Behold the new.
Thank you, Dr. Samantha, for that. I know our colleague is itching to respond. I know you've prepared several responses for him. But before you do that, I want you to also address some of the issues that came out of these opinion surveys, the issue of undecided voters. Do you think, in your opinion, that the results will somehow sway these undecided voters?
Yeah, to some extent, because the undecided voter might realize that, oh, well, probably that is the winning side. How about I vote in favor of the winning side? The other undecided voter might be sympathetic to the prospectively vanquished side. And they say, well, let me pity them with a vote. It's normal. It happens. But coming back to issues that the good colleague has raised, he speaks of the issue of land. But, history does not forget. You'd recall that one of the founding preambles of the movement for democratic change, which, you know, exfoliated as a result of factionalism. But if we go back to the foundations of MDC, you discover a situation whereby MDC was from the outset opposed to the entire aspect of the land reform, arguing that the aspect of land reform, it is illegal. And this is why you find out that the prominent and the initial sponsors of that movement, or in the interlocutors of the sponsorship that occurred between 2000, between 99 up until 2008, include the likes of Roy Bennett, who were actually victims of the black people's quest to get land. But again, why are they speaking of the issue of land now? Because the issue of land is a permanent aspect of the aspirations of our people. They've realized that continued epistemic dependence on the ideas of the West and wanting to defend the capital that was initially stolen from the time Rhodes entered Zimbabwe is no longer sustainable. Why? Because the Zimbabwean mass is learned. And it is that sense of learnedness that the doc referred to, which is going to motivate the Zimbabwean to vote for a party that has enabled the black men to continuously walk on the land. And the aspect of the land is important because the land aspect, the land reform actually benefited close to 1.8 million families. And whenever those 1.8 million families are on that land, it's a permanent reminder of how much the people of how much those beneficiaries ought to vote for ZANU-PF. And again, the aspect of Zimbabweans being destitute is really less cognizant of the policy prospectus of the current ZANU-PF manifesto, where ZANU-PF has made clear indications to alleviate the destitution of the mass, particularly the urban populace, by ensuring that it's going to have 1 million plus households as part and parcel of its national housing project. And that on its own is going to deal with the aspect of land baroning, which was largely propagated by members of the opposition that were leading the municipalities in the urban cities, in the urban areas. And then again, to talk of crowds in a rally and want to use that as a yardstick to enter the state house is quite problematic, because we know that all parties pass crowds. And when crowds are passed, then to want to base on that mere excitement of seeing pictures of crowds as a reflection of election outcomes is problematic. I'll take you back to the time when Joshua Nkomo, the first opposition, one of the prominent and oldest opposition leaders of our time, before the Unity Accord, he had massive rallies in Bulawayo, rallies that would shut down streets, but ZAPU could not make it in the elections compared to ZANU-PF. And it is not new. When MDC was born, it managed to harbor the support of the entire labor movement, and it had crowds. In 1998, if you read Patrick Bond, you discover that there were massive strikes and all of that, that were seemingly in favor of the opposition. But until this day, ZANU-PF is still in power. So crowds really are not a reflection of electoral conquest.
I think we're really getting into the bone and flesh, the bone and flesh of this issue, because we're talking about the pre-poll surveys and how they reflect. And I think from what I've heard from both of you is that probably these surveys, they are not so useful at this moment in time, just because of their timing and just because their age right now. So as you said, a survey probably is, if it's not 24 hours old, it's not useful enough. Mm-hmm. And then Mr.
But it's not logical to have a survey within 24 hours or a week before elections.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I would say logical, but I would say that.
No, a survey that comes 24 hours before an election. No, you can't do that.
May not be useful
for
the electorate, but might be very useful to the academia.
It's not impossible.
You can't say that. Surveys are carried out across the world where they are actually used usefully. In 24-hour gaps. They're carried out 24 hours before the election because they have a very short shelf life. they rot in a very few hours. That's what happens in the rest of the world. And if you do not have the ability to carry them out that regularly, there is no point in carrying them out, because and this one is a fantastic one. It's a survey that is carried out in April and the results come out in June, something like that. By the time the results come out, it is no longer reflective of reality on the ground, and it's not worth the paper that's written on. But having said that, I think you're going to have to let me respond to his very long speech. Thank you. I think that if you are in ZANU-PF and you win elections by rigging, of course crowds mean nothing. But if you are in a democratic society, if you are in the MDC or anywhere else in the world, the size of your crowds in rallies is an indication of the momentum that you have. So we're talking about President Nelson Chamisa building a massive momentum here. We have had a very beautiful week last week. We've been stopped a little bit with President Nelson Chamisa hunkering down to deal with nominations. But we know that our smart policies have been received very well by Zimbabweans, and that, in fact, we are seeing a growing number. Look, the idea that you can bus people to rallies is only sustainable if you have a big budget. If you're ED and you're suspected of killing people for diamonds in the DRC, if you are ED and your friends may have been involved in the Maranga diamond fiasco, then you probably have a lot of money to do to put a big cloth around every building in Harare and to put a billboard every 2 meters to try and buy the election results. You can't do that if you're in the opposition. You don't have the money. You can try and buy every citizen a T-shirt if you're ED. We don't do that in the MDC. We don't have the money to do that. It is our members that buy their own T-shirts, not from us, from the streets, red T-shirts. When you see those red Cs in front of President Nelson Chamisa, every one of them has been paid for by the person who's wearing them. We don't have money to bus anybody. You go to they're not even rallies when you have ED speaking to people. They don't qualify as rallies. They're assemblies for school children. That's all he addresses. School children assemblies with school buses. We don't do that in the MDC. We address people who are voting age. They come by themselves. They wear their own T-shirts. We don't give them internet passwords so that they can broadcast. They use their own internet. That is what a true movement of the people does. That is how President Nelson Chamisa has energized this country, given us politics like we've never seen it before. The only opposition leader in this country to do so much with so little.
Okay. Interesting.
That was a mouthful and interesting at all. I don't. Did you have anything to respond to?
Yeah, certainly.
I don't think it does.
No, I have. Actually.
Come on, my friend. Don't speak because you have a mouth. Speak because there's something to say.
No, I speak because I have issues to contend. Oh. And to say that a political party is organic simply because it is broke is not a reality. Because we know there was a time when MDC was doing all these things that ZANU-PF is doing.
President
now.
Nelson Chamisa wasn't the president of the party then.
Whatever. The
behold
case,
the new.
But he
continues,
he's a continuity of the past.
Behold the new.
He is a continuity of the past. And let me finish. And you'd recall that if MDC had proximity to fans, prior to the donor fatigue that manifested in 2013, after the failure of donor fatigue, they could even be having an elegant campaign. But then to now want to argue that, no, we are organic, we are in touch with the masses because we are broke. No, it's not an argument that you can want to sell through. And this issue of continuously saying elsewhere in the world, looking at the contextual scenario with other perspectives from elsewhere, really, I think is quite problematic because because what happens elsewhere cannot happen here in some instances. And it is structural circumstances that facilitate that. So at the end of the day, let us not use views from elsewhere and want to justify our being bankrupt because the white man has seen that we have failed to save his cause. And then we are saying, no, we are organic and in touch with the people.
Is that why ED wears a scarf in the middle of summer? Because he thinks the heat doesn't work differently.
My colleagues, I think this is an interesting discourse that we are having, and probably what would like to have now, issues related, parting issues related to the two opinion surveys. I know you guys can talk a lot about your political parties and who is wearing
a
what.
Point of correction, I belong to no political party.
Thank you very
I'm
much.
Just a political analyst.
Yes, you can talk about politics as a political analyst. You can talk about his political party as a spokesperson of...
I'm just a spokesperson. Yes.
But obviously, the people who are listening to this program would want to hear your parting shots as we round up this program. But it must be about the two opinion surveys that has been done. It must not be about the scarf. It must not be about
being broke.
About being broke. About the land reform program, which was so successful, and so it must not be about that. Let's narrow it down to the focal point of this discussion, which are the two opinion surveys that have recently been done. So I will start with you, and then you then come in.
Yeah, I think when all has been said and done, what is important is that these surveys should assist. Not only should they determine the direction of the voting on the part of the electorate, but I think they should also play a pivotal role in helping political parties to locate their weaknesses and in the process to find their strengths. But above it all, enable those that have got a leading trail in terms of consolidating power to continuously consolidate their power. Why? Because the tradition of politics is to ensure that you capture power, you consolidate it, and of course, you crush opposition. That's the game.
Thank you very much, political analyst. Before you stray into the other side, we come to Dr. Svanda, your parting shots about the two surveys.
Look, I think that it is very clear that the surveys have put our candidate at an advantage in more than one way. And I think that what has also come out of this debate about surveys is that President Nelson Chamisa is a miracle maker. You can't, speak against God. God is speaking to everyone here. He's saying that, look, in those surveys, God's voice can be heard. He's saying that even a broke party, a party that relies on nothing, President Nelson Chamisa will perform the miracle. Who on earth would have thought that any politician will bring the thousands upon thousands of people to political rallies every week upon week at their own expense? This is a miracle maker. And I think that this has a lot to do with God. God has heard the cry of the people of Zimbabwe, and he has his effective and perfect messenger, and it is President Nelson Chamisa, and he's doing it very well.
Thank you for coming to the program, and I would like to thank our listeners for listening to this program, and I would like to thank our panelists who come here, Mr. Richard Runyararo Mahomba, coming from the Leaders for Africa Network, and Dr. Nkululeko Siwanda, the spokesperson for Nelson Chamisa, the presidential candidate for the MDC Alliance, and also Mr. Simbarashe Moyo, the chairperson of the Combined Harare Residents Association. We are broadcasting from the Capital 263. Free to say it, free to do it. Please stay tuned.
And now.
Capital 263.